Everyone, and welcome back to a brand new episode of Third Culture Kids with myself and Leia. As usual,
Hi. We
will be interviewing a third culture kid on what makes them unique.
But before we dive straight into it, we want to share with you a little bit about what's been going on. So we're both still in Paris, which has been in lockdown for around 2 weeks, I think. We're going strong, and it's probably going to last until December. And you would think that lockdown means like, I know, you would think that lockdown means like less adventures or whatever, but let me tell you that it has not been the case. Like, Sarah, so many things have happened to you. Do you want to tell us a little bit about how you've been?
Yeah, it's okay. So like, it's been a month and a half about where I'm living by myself for the first time. And I feel so blessed to have my own apartment and it's amazing, but I think just having it be during lockdown makes it a bit more difficult because like I want to see my friends and stuff, but it's impossible. They're really strict things that we have to follow. Every time we go outside, we have to say where we're going. I cut my finger the first week of being in my apartment, and then I tore a few ligaments in my foot. And then 2 days
sorry ago, I'm laughing it's not that it's funny, it's just that it was like nonstop for you.
No, it was literally one after another. And then 2 days ago, my computer completely died, and I've been needing a new computer for a while, and I literally thought I was going to lose, like, my entire life source, which is so sad that we live in an age where, like, our whole life depends on a MacBook.
Yeah.
But thank God, I used to not trust iCloud, but I love her so much because my landlord left me this desktop computer, and I'm like, okay, I'm just going to log on to iCloud and see if maybe I saved like one paper from high school so I can feel better about myself. Mm-hmm. And I logged on and all my files started uploading. So like, I think when I first got this computer that I have, I did like automatic backup to iCloud, not just
Hallelujah.
On the hard drive. I know. So like, honestly, thank God, because I was about to, I don't even know what I would have done. Gone to the U.S. Embassy and said, please help me, my hard drive is broken. Anyways.
Yeah, because that's how it works.
I know. And also, I have to do these weird exercises on a bouncing board for my foot. Like, I tore a few ligaments in it, and now it's healing. And I have to do these, like, weird bouncing exercises. And I realize I have terrible balance. So that's what I'm working on. Physically, mentally, spiritually, horrible balance. Okay, Leia, what have you been up to?
Well, for me, like, less things have been happening. I've actually been taking the quarantine as an opportunity to just, like, do things I really want to do. And like, it's been so sunny in Paris, though, and, like, the parks are still open. So just going outside, being in the sun. I'm still seeing some people that are in the neighborhood, which is nice. The markets are open.
Like me.
Like you. And the markets are open, so you can still get, like, a bunch of, like, fresh fruits and vegetables. And yeah, so I don't know. Overall, for me, it's been less dramatic than Sarah, definitely, for sure, but still good. Yeah, so everything's
fine.
No, I feel
like wellness is so good. Yeah,
yeah,
that's amazing.
Yeah.
Okay, so
exactly.
Let's get straight into the interview with our guest today, Alan. He's pretty diverse, from producing World War II documentaries, to being on the USA skeleton team, almost being an Olympian. He's really, really interesting, and he is definitely the man with a plan. So without further ado, we hope you enjoyed today's episode. And as always, thank you for listening.
Hi, Alan. How are you? Welcome to our show.
Yay! Thank you. Hello, how are y'all doing?
We're really good.
We're all right. Yeah, surviving the confinement, I guess.
Sipping some coffee.
Mm-hmm. Yes, and I'm starting this thing where I drink water before coffee, and it's really difficult, but it's my first day and I'm going strong, so I just drank like a ton of water before coffee.
Really? Why is there like some science behind that? I mean, I drink water all the time.
Well, actually, yeah, having coffee first thing in the morning dehydrates you. I just like listened to this masterclass from the sleep doctor, and he's talking about when you sleep your body loses a lot of water. So
who's the sleep doctor?
To drink coffee. His name, I'll link it in
Dr.
the description.
Sleep.
It's like Michael. Yeah, that's his like stage name, I guess, because he's always.
Oh,
like
he's a
Dr.
famous
L.
person. Okay.
Oh yeah, he's super famous. But yeah. Anyway, so yeah, I'll put all that in the description. But it's really interesting. So Alan, what brings you to Paris and AUP? I know you're from the South, and I just want to say I went to Belmont for a year in Nashville.
Did you really?
Yeah,
actually,
that was my first school.
That's awesome. I am from Mississippi, but I actually live in East Nashville. So,
Oh, really?
yeah, over by Five
Oh, no
Points.
way. Oh my gosh, that's amazing. Oh, the pizza place?
Yeah, I'm like a
Oh my
block away from the pizza
god.
place.
Dude, that was literally the best pizza. We would go all the time.
Oh, it's amazing. They're open till 3 a.m., that walk-up window.
Yeah, oh my gosh. Oh my gosh. Yeah, so how did you like decide on like Paris and AUP? Because I feel like that's so like out there and you know.
I mean, it's the same with everybody else. I want to change. I wanted something different because I'm 32 and I went to University of Utah in 2007. So I've been
Are
to a
you
traditional
Mormon?
university.
Oh,
No,
okay.
not at all. Not even a little bit. No, no
No,
offense to the LDS people, but no.
yeah, I didn't mean to be in an offensive way. I was just curious because they're all there, so.
Oh yeah.
Oh.
I've got a lot of Mormon friends, but
Me
no, I
too,
am
yeah.
not.
They're amazing.
Yeah. Seriously, a lot of them can bake really well too.
You know, I don't think I've ever met a
Yeah.
Mormon before. I mean, I probably have
Yeah,
without
we're
knowing
talking
it.
about this.
Yeah, they're just not from,
Yeah.
like, we don't have that many where I'm from. I mean, I don't think
Yeah.
so.
Where are y'all from anyway, if you don't mind me asking? About.
I'm from Southern California.
Yeah,
Nice.
and I grew up in Hong Kong.
Right on.
Yeah, so.
Yeah, Valeria's
Yeah.
French. Like, your
Casual.
yeah, I'm
Parents.
French, though.
Yeah.
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 Yeah, so
Not
you
a
were
Hong
telling
Kong
us
native.
about like your university before. So yeah, so
Yep.
what was your journey like? Like what got you here?
Yeah.
That is
And the
a
Olympics, dude. We'll get to that.
that's a very, very long story.
Go for it.
But for yeah, I went to the University of Utah on a Olympic development scholarship because I used to be an athlete in a winter sport called skeleton. And if you don't know what
Can you tell us
skeleton
what that
is,
is?
yeah, it's
Yeah. Is it bobsledding?
actually so it's the USA Bobsled and Skeleton Federation. So our sports are actually we have the same national governing body and international governing body, the International Bobsled Skeleton Federation. But bobsled is two or four people pushing a sled getting in, and skeleton is one man head first on something about the size of a lunch tray.
Okay, and what got you
So,
into
I mean,
Talk about taking chances.
yeah, exactly. I mean, I saw that they were bringing skeleton back to the Olympics in 2002, and I was like, oh my gosh, like. I was 14. I was like, I need to do this. This is what I need to do. And my parents are like, skeleton? No, that's satanic. You're not doing that. Like, no. Like, we're Southern. Not happening. I was like, no, I need to do it. I was like, superheroes fly head first. I can fly head first. Like, this is the dream. And so I ended up just like emailing coaches. I was like, hey, I want to do this. And they're like, you're a 14-year-old kid from Mississippi. So, no. Like, get out of here with that mess. And I was like, no, I don't think you understand. Like, something inside me, like,
This is
I'm
me,
doing
yeah.
this. Like, I'm sorry if you don't want me to.
Yeah.
And so they invited me out to a combine in Park City, Utah. And a combine is like an NFL combine or any other sport where you do running and jumping. It's a physical test.
It's so beautiful there, right? I've never been, but
Utah, oh, it's absolutely gorgeous.
yeah, I need to go. I feel like that's inner peace city. Like, that's where you find it.
And the snow in Utah also is some of the best snow in the world. It's
Oh, okay.
so like light and fluffy. I
Okay.
make mini snow angels. Even at the skeleton track when like everybody's racing and being serious, I'm like, I'm gonna go make a snow angel. And I'll like walk out to the running and make a snow angel. I was like, everyone's like, Alan,
Dude,
grow
that's
up.
amazing.
Wait, so you just reached out through email and they took you seriously at some point?
Yeah.
Yes, because the whole thing with the combine is it's a good way to weed out people that aren't serious about it or don't have any physical ability. But and they're like, this 14-year-old kid, like obviously he's not gonna be able to compete with all these like college athletes and ex-pro athletes because a lot of people that we get are like ex-NFL players that had to retire or people that played football or sports in college and didn't make it to the pros, so they go Olympic. And I showed up. And I was 14, and I ended up running faster and jumping higher than a lot of people in their 20s. So they're like,
Wow, that's incredible.
Damn. So, hey, you want to come try it on ice? And I was like,
yeah. Bobby. Did they make you, like, sign a waiver since you were literally, like, a child?
Oh, yeah. Especially in the U.S., you get some waivers for everything. And my parents had to come with me and, like, sign everything.
Oh, my gosh. It's so funny.
So, they invited me to go try it on ice. And so what I did was my mom and my dad and I went out to Park City, Utah, which I also have three siblings, an older sister, an older brother, and a younger brother who stayed in Mississippi while we did this. And we went out to Utah, and they're like, all right, so here's how it works on trying it on ice. They're like, I was in Park City, and there's two tracks in the U.S., one in Lake Placid, New York, one in Park City, Utah. And then there's in Canada, there's one in Whistler, Canada. And until last year, there was one in Calgary, Canada, but they just blew it up because, I don't know, I hate that track anyway. It's literally my least favorite.
Okay,
in the world, so.
Whatever then.
I was like, please let me do the plunger to blow it up because I hate it. It's nothing but
so
bad
this
memories
was before there. Before your undergrad, right?
I was 14.
Yeah, I was tell us grade. About like your first 4 years of college. Oh my god, eighth grade, that's so young.
Yeah. The first 4 years of college, I mean, by that you mean my first three semesters maybe that I went to college before I failed out with a 1.3 GPA.
Wow.
Yeah, you gotta work to get a 1.3.
Yeah. Damn.
I was very impressed with myself. Even my parents.
Did you just not like what you were doing?
Yeah.
Yeah,
so
what happened?
What it was, so I went to college. I was 18 years old and on this Olympic development scholarship, and I was training full time for the Olympics. And then I also started teaching skiing privately. And so I was a private ski instructor, and I started getting work full time. I was training for the Olympics full time, and then I had school full time. So obviously one of those is going to drop away, and I'll let you guess which one. When you're making a lot of money teaching private ski instructing, my parents
especially
were like,
to all the suburban kids.
Oh yeah, because it's Park City, so everybody from Mississippi would come out to vacation, and then word was out that I lived there, and they're like, oh, we can get Alan to teach us to ski.
Yeah.
And so they would pay me just
That's
under
amazing.
The table.
So you were making like a decent living even through your undergrad, which is something most people just don't do.
I was making too much money to do my undergrad.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So
it was, even my parents were like, honestly, like with how much you're making, like it may be worth just dropping out and doing this and skeleton the whole time. Mm. And so I was like, cool, thanks. Cause my parents they're the literally most supportive people in the world. Cause they're like, you can go to school anytime, but your body's going to shut down eventually. You can't be an athlete forever.
Yeah.
Do you think that made so all of the... Oh, sorry. Go ahead, Leia.
No, I was just saying, like, that's awesome that they're so supportive.
Yeah, no, yeah. And going off of that, I was going to say, like, do you think them being so supportive, like, your choice to transition between so many different things kind of made it easier in a way?
Oh, absolutely. Because, I mean, that's the whole thing is having a support system of friends and family helps you do anything.
Mm-hmm.
And if you have, but obviously there's people that are going to be like, oh no, you can't do that. Like you shouldn't do that. You need to do this. And,
you're 14.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But then it must feel kind of different than being in Paris, being far away from your like traditional support system. How's that like?
It's surprisingly not that new because with skeleton, I mean, all I did was travel. It's what you do. You're in a different country every week, every 2 weeks. And so starting in October is when the skeleton season starts. And the whole U.S. team would move up to Lake Placid, New York, and we'd be in the Olympic Training Center. And we'd have U.S. selection races. And then we'd go to Park City, Utah for a couple weeks and do the second half of U.S. selection races. And then how you place in those determines what skeleton tour you get put on. And there's different tours. There's World Cup, which is the absolute best, Intercontinental Cup, which is right under that, Europa Cup, which is just races in Europe, and then North America's Cup, which is just races in North America. And so if you're on ICC, Europa Cup, or World Cup, then all you're doing, you're barely in the US. And so
what are some of like the coolest places you've been to in your opinion?
St. Moritz, Switzerland is easily the best. Except it's weird because fur is still socially acceptable there. So it's kind of like stuck in time. Like you'll have these super posh like women with like mink fur coats and walking to
the that pay like 10 euros for a coffee.
yeah, it is the most expensive place. And yeah, we get very insane. Creative because there's not really any money in skeleton because most people don't know what it is. And you can't like go in your backyard and like go do skeleton. So we end up we'll have four people that'll rent like a two bedroom and we'll all share beds. Alex Ivanov was usually my bedmate. So we were good at sleeping together. Except the first night on tour that we had to share a bed was I got in on the left side, he got in on the right side, but I rolled to the right and he rolls to the left. So we rolled and we were facing each other really close and we're like, yeah, you want to switch sides? He's like, yeah, let's switch sides. So we like got out to switch sides and then like the rest of the time we were money. Like we always knew like, yeah, I'm on the right, he's on the left.
Aww. So, yeah. And so can you talk us through like, yeah, what got you to Paris?
Yeah. And so Paris, it was just natural that I spent a lot of time in Europe with sport and obviously around this international crowd because international sport and you're competing for the US and everybody else is competing for their nation. And so it's a lot of languages. And I noticed that it was mainly the Americans that don't speak any other languages and all the other Europeans obviously speak English. So for the Russians, they said they only speak Russian except when they get drunk and then their English gets a lot better. they were like, good, don't know English. We're like, yeah, okay. But the Russians, that's a whole nother story.
Yeah, we could do a whole episode on that.
Yeah. And then I've always loved French culture, French food, French women. And my whole family, we vacationed to France a lot. This is where we vacation is Paris. And so I was like, you know what? I think I may apply here. And I actually didn't tell my family that I was applying to AUP. And because I wanted to go somewhere where I could be immersed in a second language, because French is my second language. So I guess it's my second language. I don't think you can.
It's your second language. You just made it way more confusing. Yeah. It's my first second language.
I could work on my third second language, but I don't know how that would work. But I actually applied to Ole Miss, so University of Mississippi, being a Mississippi resident. I was like, oh, I'll get in there. I applied for Belmont and AUP. And
what majors did you apply with?
What majors?
Yeah.
Do you mean like what did I want to do? It was business.
Yeah, going
majors.
Into it. Yeah. Okay, business. Yeah.
Just because I work as a filmmaker right now. And yeah. You don't need a degree to do film. It's very much a hands-on job. Like, you learn on the job. You learn while doing it. You take a low-level job, and then you work your way up and learn it. Yeah. But honestly,
so you applied to those three schools, and then what?
Yeah, so I applied to those schools, and in this order, I got a rejection letter from Ole Miss. And I was like, Ole Miss, it's like, how did Ole Miss reject me? Like, I'm from Mississippi.
Yeah. Like, I'm like, Mississippi. I love resident. Her. Like
no, the state school doesn't reject you. That's your safety school. Oh. And so my parents, they knew I applied for Ole Miss and Belmont. And they're like, all right, well, you know, if you didn't get into Ole Miss, chances are you won't get into Belmont. You know, it's a lot harder school to get into. And they're like, so just go to community college, get your GPA up. Because they're like, it's 1.3, so obviously not that good. And but then the next week
parents sound so cool and supportive.
Oh, they're absolutely amazing. They're
that's like
fantastic.
I'm
actually side note, I'm secretly applying my mom to AUP as a part-time student so she can get visa to come over.
That's awesome.
So
wow, that's amazing. What would she study? What would she
creative writing?
Oh, wow, that's amazing.
She loves doing creative nonfiction.
Wow. Okay, so you went to community college?
No, so the next week I actually ended up getting my Belmont acceptance letter. And Belmont called me.
I know the feeling.
Yeah, and I was ecstatic. I was like, oh my God, I actually got into Belmont. Like, this is amazing. And like, my family, my little brother lives in Nashville. We had the house in Nashville. And all this was happening in Mississippi. And so my mom was like, this is great. Like, you can get your little brother to go back to school. Y'all can go to school together. You can live in the house. Like, we can come up. We can help you study. Like, I was like, yeah. I got stoked. And then a couple weeks later, I got an email from AUP that's like, hey, congratulations. You're accepted into AUP. And I was like, holy crap. I was like, Paris. Like, obviously, I want to go to Paris. And
wow, so you chose between Belmont and Paris?
Yes, I had to
choose. Dude, that's like almost like me. That's so crazy.
And well, I actually didn't really have to choose. So I'll get to that. It's so I walked into my parents' bedroom and I was like, Mom, Dad, like, I gotta tell you, I actually don't think I'm gonna be able to go to Belmont. And they're like, oh no, what happened? I was like, you know, ended up applying to a school in Paris and I got in. So I figured I should go there. And my dad was like, all right. And then my mom was like, well, you know, Belmont, it's like Scott's there, Nashville, everything's good. And my dad and I just kind of looked at her like, what is going on?
It fits into a box. Yeah.
And then she walked into the kitchen. I walked into the bedroom and like, it was the morning and she was getting coffee. My dad and I were talking like,
I love this play-by-play.
Yeah. By the way.
This is how I tell stories. It's such very
no, honestly, Sam, go like, for I it. Love it.
And so my dad and I were sitting in the bedroom, like, what? Like, what is going on? Like, why isn't she more excited? And about she was at the kitchen for about 20 minutes. Then we just heard, "Ah, you're moving to Paris!" And then she sprinted back to her bedroom. She's like, "You're going to Paris!" And she was super excited. She's like, "I didn't know what was going on." She's like, "I didn't think it was real." She's like, "I thought I was dreaming." She's like, "I walked in the kitchen. I was like." Did he say Paris? And,
oh my God. That's so cute. That's amazing.
And so I actually ended up calling Belmont. I called the admissions officer that I was working with and I told her the situation. I was like, hey, I also got into this Paris school. And before I could say anything, she goes, okay, cool. So I'm going to hold your Belmont admission. You go to Paris for at least a year. And you're not coming to Belmont this year. But if you do decide to come to Belmont, just email me and I'll waive all the fees and you're in.
That's amazing.
So I was like, oh, so you made my decision for me.
Welcome to private school in the South.
Yeah, she's like, no. She's like, everybody needs to move to Paris.
Yeah, so I was like, All right. That's incredible.
It's like the universe wanted you to come here.
Yeah,
it's fate.
Yeah.
Exactly.
And when was that? How long have you been in Paris?
That was summer 19. So this is my second year.
Okay. So what's your major? What are you – because – Leigh and I were looking at your Instagram account last night, and you literally are involved in so many projects. Like,
it's too many, trust me.
Too and many, but also you're a student. Like, how is that? How is that balance? What are you up to?
Well, you know, when you have so much that you need to do that you end up taking a nap? It's pretty much how I live my life. I take a lot of naps, and I have a lot of hobbies. But it's just because... But then I'll sit down. I'll be like, all right, I'm working. I'll just get stuff done. But I'm currently an international business major with a theater minor.
Okay.
And mainly because you don't need a degree to do film and a business degree. I've got a lot of films that are friends that work in the business world. And they're like, if you want a job, I can get you a job. So it's a practical thing, but obviously most of my friends are like, yeah, go pursue being an actor, go be a writer, go be a filmmaker. They're like, but as we all know, so many people want to be writers, actors, filmmakers, and it's extremely difficult and challenging. Mm-hmm. And so it'll be nice to have a business degree or like a fallback job if something happens. Or
yeah, just up your sleeve.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. And so while I was here, I was doing that, and I was talking to my advisors, and I ended up, there was no AUP Actors Club. And I was like, why is there no club for actors? Like, there's no real opportunities to act at AUP. And I was we have one acting class that I took with Say Shiomi, and Say is one of my favorite professors at AUP. He is a saint. He will bend over backwards to help everybody, every single student, and it's anything you need. He'll he's got you. But I was taking that class and I was talking to Say, and he's like, yeah, he's like, somebody else emailed me. They're like, why is there nothing for actors at AUP? And so one day after class, me and one of the actors from class, we set up a meeting and we're like, hey, we need to start this. So it's me and Ava Patina. I think that's how you say her last name, if y'all know Ava. And we're like, what do we do? Like, we want to act. We enjoy acting. And we simply say, like, I guess let's promote it in the class and see if anybody wants to come join it. And then we can talk about what we need to do, like plays, play readings, improv, things like that. And it grew. We invited the class. And then we posted a couple things on AUP Engage, and word of mouth got around. And then AUP actors, we were putting on a play last semester, and we had about 25 active members in our group, which I think it actually made us the biggest active group at AUP.
Yeah.
And we were putting on a play called Almost Maine that I was.
I read that script in high school because I did theater.
Oh, yeah. See, there you know. Yeah. It's a great, easy play. It's a bunch of vignettes, so it's two-person scene.
Yeah.
And so what I did was, I am also a member of the Creative Production Club, which I'm now the president of. And that's just because this creative production is just anything productive-wise, films, theater, and we partnered with them last year and we got directors from that club. And so Almost Maine is, I think, 7 or 8 vignettes. So it's 8, probably 10 page scenes with 2 people. Mm-hmm. And so I cast everybody's scene and then I cast a director from the Creative Production Club with that scene. And so, and then I was overall.
So everything kind of snowballed for you.
Yeah. And everything just like got bigger and bigger and bigger. And then, I am actually the president of the AUP Games Club, like video games and board games. And the reason that happened was because they would have their meetings next to where we had acting meetings. And so we'd take a break from acting meeting and I would go over and play video games and things like that with them. And then this year they're like, hey, we need a president. And no one stepped up. I was like, I'll do it.
Okay.
Yeah. Like, why not? And yeah, so that's like, those are my clubs that I got in with AUP. And
what about like your other projects in Paris? You were talking about making World War II documentaries.
Yeah. So
yeah, music video.
So filmmaker wise, my father and I actually make documentaries together. I make narrative shorts by myself, which if you don't know, a narrative is something scripted and written and this is what we're going to do. This is our shot list. And documentary is, this is what we want the subject to be. This is what we're going to make a movie about. And then you go and film, obviously, about real life situations. And so my dad and I, we make documentaries together of World War II pilots and or just World War II vets in general. It started with just pilots because my grandfather flew B-26s in World War II. And he passed away in 1988, the year that I was born. I was actually in the last picture with him. And so, but my dad was sitting at the kitchen table and he had a book of B-26 stories that were just recently written from people. And he was reading one and he found one that mentioned my grandfather and his dad. And so he's like, oh my gosh, like I have to see if this guy that wrote this is still alive. And his name was Joe Stevens. And turns out we did some internet research and Joe Stevens was alive and well in Orbisonia, Pennsylvania. So we emailed his son and we're like, hey, can we come up and talk to him? Like my dad was like, my dad flew with him. And so I just love to, you know, get everything, like see if he knew anything about my dad and just talk about his war experience. And so we went up there and talked to him and we asked him like, hey, would you be interested in letting us come back up with a film crew, which the film crew was essentially me, my dad, and a couple of my other friends that just literally 2 friends that work in the film industry with cameras and lighting and equipment. And he's like, absolutely. So we went up there and we interviewed Joe Stevens for probably 5 hours that day. And so what we end up doing, this ended up being our model for all of our other interviews, is we interview the vet as long as they want. If they want to take a break, we take a break. If they want to keep going, we keep going. It is all up to them, no matter how tired we are. Mm-hmm. And because these World War II vets, they're 90 years old, they're all dying off, and a lot of their stories are going to the grave with them.
I don't mean to laugh, just the way you said that.
Don't worry, I know the way I say things.
No, but that's a fantastic project, like giving them a voice, letting them tell their story in the way they want to tell it, you know?
Exactly.
That's really empowering as well for them.
So, yeah, they love it. And so what we... is we get all the footage we get, we give the raw footage to the families. And we're like, this is all the interview that we got. And then we take that and we'll get one story from that and turn it into a short film. And mm-hmm. so with him, we made a short film called Joe, is just what it's called. And it's about, he got the Silver Star because he was flying his B-26 and his plane got shot up so much and people in his plane got shot. And he's like, there's no way that he could bail out. And so he had to fly his plane back. And when he landed it, they're like, this plane it's unflyable. Like, the fact that you were able to do this was amazing, especially with your whole crew with bullet wounds. And he ended up getting the Silver Star for that, which is the third highest military honor. So it's the Medal of Honor, Gold Star, Silver Star. Okay. And so we have that story and we put that out to film festivals. But the great thing about doing this is you actually get to hear stories that they don't tell their kids, because they're kind of more comfortable, because we sit there and we talk with them for a little bit and we get to know them. We'll go up a couple times to get mm-hmm. make sure that they're comfortable with us. Like, we were filming this one guy who I won't name just because he may not want to be named.
Mm-hmm. And yeah, of course.
He was another B-26 pilot in mm-hmm. World War II. And he proceeded to tell us for about 30 minutes to an hour about all the women that he had sex with while on tour in World War II and all the different countries and which ones were his favorite.
Oh my God.
And his son was in the room and his son was like, Dad?
Oh no.
Never told me this one before. About time you hear it. You got a daughter. You know how it works. I'm like, all right.
Oh my gosh.
Okay.
Yeah.
So how do you think confinement and lockdown has kind of changed the trajectory of all the projects you're working on, clubs? Like, I know the three of us are in the dance club at AUP, so now that's all through Zoom. Do you have any advice for people who are basically trying to keep their passions going during this time?
It is extremely difficult, especially like with this World War II thing, is we had to completely stop everything because all the people we interview are at risk.
Yeah.
So.
Oh, yeah. I didn't even think about that.
Yeah. So we had to completely shut it down, which is extremely disappointing because I actually had an interview set up with somebody from the French Resistance, and I was going to do a whole series on resistance fighters. But
that would have been so cool.
Yeah. Hopefully he makes it through this.
Yeah. Just one thing. Where can people see your work?
Where can we find you too? I'll link your Instagram as well, but
if you Google Alan Blackwell, it should come up, or you can do Alan Blackwell Vimeo. Alan Blackwell Vimeo.
Yeah. Okay.
Perfect. Yeah. Just text me a link so I can add it in the description and our listeners can find you.
Yeah. And it's, and it's A-L-L-E-N Blackwell, not A-L-L-A-N.
Perfect.
Yeah. And so are you still, like, are some of your projects still up and running despite the lockdown?
Yeah, exactly. So that's what I was going to talk about, is they're still going. And obviously, so I have this setup that you got to be creative with what you're doing. And
of course.
You film yourself, you get things done. Like, I actually keep my camera right here. Next to me in case, like, I want to set up something up, and I've even got, like, lenses. And I even have, like, a little GoPro if I want to.
You're super well equipped.
Oh, yeah.
Thank you. I try. I dabble. And but you even get inventive with the things that you do. So I don't know if I can show y'all right now, and I don't know if you want me to show you right now, but it's weird. But so there's a thing called a Snorri Cam. And what that is, like when you're watching a movie and you notice that the camera is attached to the person, and so when the actor moves, the background moves behind them, but the actor stays still. I ended up creating one of those with this tripod. So I wore a belt and I put the front into the belt and I put two arms behind me, and then I got another belt and like ratcheted down the belt. So the tripod head was in front of me, and I have a hookup, the foot, and I put the camera there. I did it with my phone because I didn't want it to fall and like drop my actual camera. And so I set it up so my camera was in front of me. So I was able to film myself around my apartment with the background of my apartment moving while I was standing still.
That's
And so
super cool.
you
Yeah,
get.
so you're just finding so many ways to be creative. I think that's important for all of us, just to make do with the space you have and,
Exactly.
you
And
know.
get inventive with the things that you have and work with what you can work with. And obviously, so like you talk to people, like with y'all, we're working on this dance music video that hopefully we get done, and we can end up filming it on Zoom if need be, webcams, you can do whatever. And we could just sit here and we could discuss and rehearse while I watch you rehearse, which, because y'all are both amazing dancers, which, well, I've never seen Sarah dance, but I assume she's amazing.
Probably. I have never seen
Not
Sarah
amazing,
dance
but thanks.
either, but I'm sure she is.
I've seen Leah dance, and she knows how to like move everything. I was like, oh man.
No,
Have you seen me? You're definitely like, I've never
No,
danced
yesterday
before joining
during
this club.
warm-up. No, what before or after warm-up, she's like, because your camera was off, and our teacher was like, Alan, I'm assuming you're okay, but you're not saying anything, so I think you're just getting up off the floor after the ab workout. It's so funny, and you're like, yeah, that's exactly what I was doing.
I was like, yeah,
She's
that's what I'm doing, Eleanor. Oh
like,
my God.
is he alive?
Oh. But
Yeah.
guys, we're out of time. I'm so sorry. That went by really, really fast. I feel like we could
Yeah,
have
oh,
like a whole other
awesome.
hour or 2 hours.
Yeah, it was
Yeah,
quick.
we'll definitely have you on again, Alan, because that was so fun.
And thank you so much for talking to us today and sharing all your
Oh
like
yeah.
stories and everything. And I'm sure our listeners had a great time too.
Oh yeah, anytime. Thanks, Lee and Sarah,
Yeah.
for having me. By
Yeah,
me
thank you
anytime.
so much, Alan. So that's it for today.
So thank you all for listening in, and we will be sharing podcasts weekly from now on. We're going to try and upload them every Monday, so keep tuned.
Also, if you would like to share your experience on being a third culture kid, we plan on interviewing guests through Zoom. Times are super uncertain, but there's no better time than now to start conversation about your passions. If you're interested, please email us at thirdculturekidsinquiry@gmail.com or DM us on Instagram. We just started an Instagram at thirdculturekidspod. So it would be really awesome if you guys would follow us, give it some love.
Yes, please.
As always, our show is available on World Radio Paris, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and anywhere else podcasts are available. So be sure to like, subscribe, and give it some love. Thanks again for listening to Third Culture Kids. Stay safe, healthy, keep social distancing, and remember that laughter is the best medicine for times like these.
Thank you.
Bye.
Bye.